Hey guys, so this is our third try here, recording this little pre-Cody show bit. So we just we chatted. This episode is with Cody Cirillo, who is a professional skier for Faction Skis, Hester Gloves, Zeal Optics, Function Wear, and at least one other that I'm forgetting, but he runs through all of them in the episode. It was great to be out there, and Cody's got so many good things to say. For a pretty soft-spoken kid, it actually was, I mean, it was an excellent episode, I think, and he's just got so many things that he wants to do, and we kind of talk through what he's done so far in the industry and what he's done so far in skiing and his ski career, Dew Tour, a bunch of just big events, and now kind of how he's transitioning. Him and his girlfriend Kellen are going to be living out of a bus that Cody picked up. It's a 1963, I want to say, Chevy bus. It's like a mid-size bus there, and it's pretty sick, man. So we got to do a podcast inside that thing, and that's kind of the deal. I'm super excited to see what they do with it. Cody kind of goes through the struggles that they had getting the bus initially and then getting the bus home because they picked it up in Idaho. And that's pretty much the deal. They talk about what they're going to do, or Cody talks about what the two of them are going to do for this season, what their plans are. And we kind of just run through the whole shebang. But I hope you guys enjoy this episode. As always, let us know what you think. Feel free to email me. It's just adam@outofpodcast.com. And yeah, obviously follow us on social, but I'm going to remind you guys all to do that again at the end of the episode. So enjoy.
Perfect. So we're going to get going on this thing. We are here with Cody Cirillo. Is that how you say your last name?
Yep.
All right, cool. Cody, what's going on, man?
How are you?
Good. So tell the people a little bit about yourself, what you do, who you ride for, what your gig is, and why we're sitting in a bus right now.
Sure. My name is Cody Cirillo. It's a professional skier out of Breckenridge, Colorado. I was big slopestyle skier for a long time on the competitive circuit. World Cups, Dew Tours, everything like that. Still skiing professionally, but trying to do some more content and style stuff now. And yeah, keep skiing.
It's pretty much what a lot of people seem like. It seems like the move lately is like shifting from competition to like just having more fun with it and kind of doing a thing and having more of a story to it, I guess, right?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's just, I don't know, such a new opportunity people are seeing with skiing.
Right.
And kind of think outside the box in terms of content and, I don't know, everything else going on. So I think there's, you know, that traditional path of getting into contest skiing and doing contests and right. As a professional skier. But now those lines of professional skier are so different. It's so expanded what you can do to be a professional skier or
right.
influencer, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
But it's exciting, I think. Like, there's a lot of people doing some really rad stuff right now, a lot of really cool projects, and yeah, gets your ideas really flowing.
It's pretty interesting to see like how the social media thing is kind of changing everything, I guess, for people. Yeah, like you can be like, you can just be a real pro skier and then you're a pro skier all of a sudden now, you know? Like, I mean, for not obviously not you, but I'm saying in general, like people get noticed based on who knows what, just their social media influence, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. It's so different. I mean, yeah, you can be a social media pro skier in a way. You don't, but I mean, it's cool. The new opportunities are awesome. I think that's
right.
Growing the sport. So,
how'd you get into skiing?
I was lucky enough to grow up in Breckenridge.
Yep.
We moved here when I was 3 years old. So kind of right away, my parents knew to throw me in the ski hill. I would ski with them when I was little, and then I think they told me the story where I was like 4 years old or something skiing, and it was like 9:30, and I just was started pouting and sitting down that I wanted French fries, and they're like, "All right, dude, this isn't gonna work. Like, we need to get him in something with structure."
Right.
So they put me in ski school, and that was kind of the program growing up. I did racing. I kind of followed my older brother in his footsteps. He was racing. And then he went into moguls, so I went into moguls. And then kind of like in that mogul age too, we saw park skiing for like the first time. We watched our parents bought us 13 by Poor Boys Productions.
Yeah.
That was like the first movie, and I was just mind blown.
Right.
I was like, oh my God, I need to do this. So I watched it like every day, pretty much, like destroyed that VCR tape. And just like, that's what I wanted to do. So I knew freestyle was like my jam. I wanted to do it. And I wanted to be a pro skier. I wanted to be in movies. And so I did moguls for a long time, jumping. And, you know, that's where I met Bobby, a lot of my other good friends.
Yeah.
And then from there, just kind of transgressed into slope style by the time I was like 16.
Sweet.
Like fully. And from there, just, yeah, kept progressing, kept trying it, was competing all the time, and then started to do pretty good. So I was stoked. Got to go to D Tours and World Cups and everything.
What's that? What's D Tour like?
D Tour is fun. It's crazy. I think the first time I did it, it was an open qualifier, and I was just like, oh my God, like this is crazy. Like practice bell hits for training and everybody goes and you're sitting at the top of the park just like, oh my right. God, that energy is so intense. It's funny, I had to do tour this last year. I did it for Faction Team event. I did half pipe and I don't ski half pipe. Like I legit don't, I haven't been in that thing like 10 years. So it's pretty funny like coming back and then just being like, you know, having fun with it. But yeah, it's cool. I mean, kudos to all the competitors. It's hard. It's hard to be like...
It is. It's super hard. It takes a certain kind of person to like do that all the time.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, just to keep practicing and be that consistent and just have that drive over and over. That's, yeah, it's so difficult.
People always talk about like how big a deal nerves are in that thing. Like, was that like always, was that an issue for you or did it not bother you going out there on a stage like that? Or like, were you just like going with it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I think with me, like I felt a lot of pressure, especially as I was getting older with it.
Right.
Because I was starting to have sponsors and obligations and I wanted to do good. I like had this like personal drive to do good. So then I think kind of the results were in my head a lot.
Right.
And I wasn't doing it necessarily having fun as much as I used to when I was younger.
Right.
Kind of like becoming a burden almost. And like my headspace wasn't great for competing at the end of it. Just like going for a result and I don't know, not really enjoying the process.
Mm. So how have you changed that? You know, how have you kind of come back to it? Like, how's your skiing like now?
Skiing now? Yeah. Just having more fun skiing all over the mountain. I've been trying to do more projects outside the park and doing a lot of other things. So then to keep a fresh perspective, I think, especially with these new kind of ideas and content plans and things that I scheme up in my mind, it just brings a new kind of energy to it all.
Mm.
Something that I'm kind of working on from the ground up and putting more into something.
Right.
And I mean, it's hard for sure. Like coming from a contest schedule throughout the season where you knew kind of how your season looked before it even like started.
It's planned, yeah.
Yeah. So you like knew exactly what you're doing. Like even for like sponsors and things like that, like going to those contests, like, you know, that's something. It's like tangible.
Right.
And now it's like, now it's just like you're the one organizing it and doing all these things.
Yeah.
And you know, the amount of work in the preseason now, like just like business wise in a way.
Yeah.
Like trying to get projects going or.
Yeah, you're doing like the legwork now.
Yeah. It's a lot. I mean, it's exciting, it's fun, and I love being part of the whole process, but man, yeah, it's difficult.
It's different, like, being your own boss, kind of. Like, it's, like, you kind of control how hard you work, how many hours you put in.
Right.
And, like, it's crazy, man. I'll argue till I'm blue in the face. Like, I think it's harder to do this side of it. Like, it is kind of a natural progression, right? Like, a lot of people seem like they do the contest deal, and then either they go into the backcountry or they just start skiing to have fun. And I think that's, like, the social media thing has kind of opened up so many more doors to be able to do that. Cause like before, like you could be a ski bum and be a really great skier and nobody would know who the fuck you are, you know, like you're just kind of out there. And now people know, right? They see what you're doing. They're following you. They're kind of like trying to pick up what you're doing.
Yeah, no, so. For sure. But yeah, I mean, I think it even makes it hard too with projects because we're so used to seeing stuff like split second when it happens.
Yeah.
Like before you'd see a movie in like in the fall, that's when you saw all the new tricks and you saw like the craziest segments.
Yeah.
But now like somebody does a new trick and you see it that day.
Yeah, that part's crazy. Somebody put up, I think I was listening to like I'm at the Dally's thing with Mike Powell like yesterday, and he was talking about this website that he's trying to create where like the content is up there. Yeah, like the content's up there for longer because right now you're putting all this effort into making an edit and making a video and like it's gone in like 2 days. Like it's not on the top page anymore in 5 hours.
Yeah.
No, you know?
Our goldfish brains.
Yeah, exactly. That's what everybody is. Like, it's crazy. I do the same thing. Like, we're doing this podcast and like we drove all the way out here and like we're going to put this thing up and then it's like we're going to post the next one and everybody's just going to move on to the next one. It's so crazy that
crazy.
Everybody just moves on. Goldfish brain for real. Yes, that's what it is. All right. So we just took a quick break here. Cody's boss came by to make sure he was working hard. So that's cool. So let's kind of move on to the next thing here. Why are we sitting in a bus?
The bus. So I bought a school bus.
Yeah.
A 1963 school bus. It's a mid-sized, not a shorty, okay? No short bus jokes here. It's mid-sized. 23 feet tip to tail.
I guess that's mid-size. That makes sense. What's a short bus, like 15? Yeah.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I think we got enough windows to qualify as mid-size.
Yeah. This is an adult bus,
Preteen.
Yeah.
So I bought a school bus. I think... I'm going to figure out what I'm going to say.
Yeah. What's the plan, basically? You know, like, what's the move? Why do you have a bus? What's the next step?
Yeah. So about the school bus, it's pretty just, I don't know, the tiny house movement and stuff like that I'd always been interested in.
Right.
Just the idea of wanting to build something and kind of do it by myself and especially living space. I think it's just so cool. There's so many opportunities and ideas and things that were flowing through my head that I wanted to do. Kellen and I, my girlfriend, had talked about like trailers and campers and things like that for a while, and tiny houses. I always remember drawing them or watching HGTV with my parents all the time. And, you know.
I didn't think anybody else watched those things, man. Those things are fun.
Yeah, right? It's cool. So just like we're always getting stoked. And then last summer, I was looking for a bit, like really considering that this was something I wanted to do. Kind of found out about the bus conversion thing.
Yep.
Just wanted to figure out kind of where that fit with me. I knew I couldn't do a tiny house because I was still traveling, but I wanted to build a place to live in and to be in and to call home. It's funny, like traveling so much throughout my career and stuff like that, never really felt like grounded in a space.
Right.
Especially too, like I went to college in the falls in California and then I come back here and it's kind of like I never had a spot to go to. And then I was traveling all winter. But I mean, I guess it's kind of ironic that I bought a moving bus, a mobile home to be grounded, and
that's home now.
Yeah.
It's on the road.
But yeah, exactly. So I think that was kind of a big motivation point in it too, and it just seemed exciting and fun, and a lot of people were kind of showing that it was possible through van conversions and stuff like that. Knew we didn't have the money for a Sprinter, nor did I really want to get a Sprinter or a van like that.
It's expensive anyway for no reason.
Yeah, super expensive. But also just wanted to have something fun, something that was unique and felt like mine, felt like Kellen and ours, felt like ours. Because we're not, I don't know, we're not Sprinter people.
Yeah.
We're 1963 bus kind of people. Kellen was in South America last summer studying abroad, and I was working in BREC and was kind of just religiously scouting Craigslist all summer looking for a bus. I knew the size I wanted, but not really sure what else. Just kind of like was looking.
Right.
And I think maybe August I found this bus in Idaho, in Blackfoot, Idaho. There's two pictures of it, just this 1963 bus, barely any info, and it was just kind of a leap of faith. Once I saw it, I was like, I think that's the one. Like, we need to check it out. Like, it was just so unique. Once I saw those curves, it was like nothing I'd seen before, and still haven't seen a bus like this before.
Once I saw those curves, like, we're talking about a girl. Like, it's like, hey. It's crazy, man.
Hey. So, my parents were super supportive in this whole thing while Kyle was gone. They thought it was a little crazy, and they're like wondering if they should let their son take this investment, you know, and like go into it. But like they were awesome and still are, like, so supportive of this project. And so it was last August, I want to say, or maybe September, we took a drive out to Blackfoot, Idaho, my parents and I, to go check out this bus. So we went over a weekend, checked it out. And we get to this airport hangar with a guy in Blackfoot, Idaho, super rural Idaho. Like, you take the 15 from Salt Lake, go all the way up into Idaho, like, farming community, really nothing there.
Yeah.
But we're like, this is the spot you'd find this bus, you know? Like, so we checked it out. It was in rough shape when we first saw it. It was raining. I wasn't too sure about it. I didn't have that, like, this will be easy kind of feeling.
Oh, no way, yeah.
Like, I was for sure scared when I saw it. I didn't have that, like, this is home feeling, you know? Like, it was like...
You're buying a bus that's, yeah, like, 50 years old.
Exactly. Yeah, it's right. Just, like, I think it all hit. It was just, like, there's going to be a lot that needs to go into this thing. But I was excited and, like, all right, we got to get this done. And here we go, right? So we brought it to a mechanic, got it all kind of checked out. It limped its way to the mechanic, I should say.
Did it run, like, when it, you got, like, it?
Barely ran.
Yeah.
Like, we had to jump it, and it, like, barely had brakes. The guy said he was, like, going in. He's like, oh, you're just going to first, and, you know, it kind of slows down. He's like, dude, like, we need brakes.
What?
Like, so we brought it to the mechanic, because I was like, no matter what, I'm going to bring it to the mechanic, see what we need to do to this thing before we kind of, like, get after it. So I brought it to the mechanic with the guy who was selling it, and then there just... The bus kind of, like, died, and there was no way that he was going to really take it from there. So I ended up buying it. Cinderella story, just like that. Sick. Beautiful.
Yeah, but, wonderful bus story, first time we met.
Yeah, so then we left it in Blackfoot, Idaho at this small kind of family mechanic for the next couple months.
Yeah.
And had to get quite a bit of work done. And yeah, then we went out to try and pick it up.
Right.
And that's a story in itself too.
I'm sure, dude. Like, this thing is, like, so people will see the video. We're going to do some video bits afterwards of kind of the process and where it's at. And, like, right now you can tell there's still some stuff that needs to be done, but it looks like you can tell what it's going to be, you know?
Thanks.
And it's pretty tight. There's an oven in here that's pretty fucking sick. So I'm sure
wood burning stove,
a bed, there's the whole nine right now. It's pretty sick. I think people will be stoked on it. So you named the bus?
We did. We named it the Honey House. Callum kind of came up with that idea. It was yellow and just kind of fit, and there were a lot of bees in this thing.
Really?
Like, in the rear, in the front, like, kind of loading headlights for children.
Yeah.
They were kind of disconnected, so I unscrewed those, and inside of all four of the headlights were beehives.
Really?
So that probably kind of helped, too, name it. Yeah. But, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's fun. We're going to keep it yellow. Not this yellow, we'll repaint it, but something airy and exciting and open, I think. Yeah. That's what we wanted to do, is share this bus and share this home and experience with people.
Right.
I think that's been, like, our major goal, is just kind of sharing it with people. And I think that this bus, even its character, really exudes that. Just, like, it's so unique and fun. It's got a face on the front, you know, pretty much. Like, I think we just want to share with people, inspire people, or get people to come on board and hang out and see what we're doing.
Yeah.
Not kind of like a stealth sprinter. There's nothing stealth about this.
Yeah, yeah. Ben Chetler has that like murdered out black sprinter, which is incredible. Sick, but it's like, how much money did that thing cost? You know, like it's sick, but this like, I don't know. I'm psyched to see what this thing ends up being and what you guys can do with it. I think this is a pretty pretty dope undertaking that you guys have started. It's a lot of work for sure.
Thanks. It's been a lot. I think, I mean, it's fun. I think we're like, it's been great building everything ourselves.
Yeah.
It's been me, Kyle, and my dad, who's been a huge help. And none of us have construction backgrounds at all. We're just figuring just it out, stuff, right? Like, my dad's got a lot of tools, and we have had a lot of wood from construction projects. So we're just kind of getting after it and figuring it out, using all the resources we can on the web or whatever. And so it's been fun. It's been cool. It's been such a big learning process for us. And yeah, I mean, it's been awesome. So many people have helped out and show their love and excitement for it. And yeah, it's been rad. It's been cool to like fully doing this ourselves with our own money and budget. Like, I think it's just been like, we're so attached to every piece in here. Cause it's like last winter when I was skiing, I was working like 3 jobs to try and make this thing work too.
Yeah.
You know, like we didn't have a huge budget or sponsor budget. Like, this is all us. Like, this is, you know, like, I don't know, hopefully showing people they can do it too.
Yeah.
Maybe they can get like a newer bus though that isn't quite as difficult.
That's part of the fun though, right? Like, I mean, I just bought a house, right? Like a while, like last year, and it's the same. It was like a total, like from 1908 and just total sick. Beat this shit. Dude, it was so much work. we found like found a dozen candles when we took down the old ceilings, like just stuffed in there knows how long, like love letters we found. Dude, it was wild. There's pictures of people like on those OG like 1930s cameras, like it's the creepiest shit. And like, you're like knocking down ceilings and there's liquor bottles falling everywhere. Like, it was so cool. So it's like that kind of, I get that kind of project. It's like, now that it's pretty much done, like you feel that attachment to the place, even though you're like, this was a total piece of shit, you know, but it's my piece of shit kind of. It's that kind of feeling, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's funny. We've been through so much already with this thing. Every time we've tried to like, mainly when we try to take it somewhere is when we get into issues. So we'll probably get into one of those soon. It's been sitting for a bit.
Yeah.
But like, so going back to it, the first time we tried to pick it up, like after it'd been at the mechanic for a while, they gave us a call like, hey, it's ready. And so we went out. I went with my dad and 2 of my good buddies. One of my friends, Pat, was moving out to Salt Lake, and my buddy Lance came and was a supporter and photographer throughout the whole thing. But so we all drive out. We take Pat's car because he's moving to Salt Lake. So we stay with his, and the next morning we zip up there. We all go into the bus. We're all stoked. We're all vibing. Like, this is so sick. We're all stoked. Like, you know, like driving it, like all having the best time. Like, 3 kids just all stoked, laughing, smiling. We like, I remember we pulled off the lot. It was like driving, high-fiving, things were going great. And get to this first little stoplight, and it just stops, and like the whole thing cuts out and dies. We're just like, oh. But it was hilarious at that time because we had this old shifter in here and we couldn't really make it work. So I remember we had this whole line stop behind us trying to go through the light, honking at us. Well, I've got Pat and Lancer ripping the stick shifter, like trying to get it to get back into drive. Finally get off, go on the highway. Things are going good. My dad's following us behind us in Pat's truck. And about 60 miles down the road, it just starts overheating like crazy.
Yeah.
Like antifreeze is dumping out of this thing. White smoke is everywhere. Antifreeze was pouring all over Pat's truck that my dad was driving behind us. My. Like, it was crazy. So we're like, all right, like, hasn't driven in a long time. We'll pull over. Things will be okay. So we pull over, let it cool down for a bit, then get back on the road. Things are good. About 6 miles in, I think we said like 66 miles after we left the lot, we just get the gnarliest rod knocking noise. Just, and I'm like, oh no, man, like something's wrong. Like, we can't fix this ourselves. Like, this isn't right. So we pull over, figure out it's a rod knocking from the engine, probably from like the old fuel pump getting oil in the gasoline. Mm. So the engine was toast. So we're about 66 miles in. You know, I just dropped so much money, like all my savings on this bus and on the mechanics to fix it. And this just happened and I need a new engine. So I'm just like gutted, you know, for a sec, you know, just like, but we're like, you know what, like, whatever, we'll see what happens. Maybe it's not as bad. So we got it towed back 66 miles back to the mechanic in Idaho. So we go for that night and we stay, and it was like getting late then, so they couldn't see it that day. So it's getting late. We went and stayed at like an Indian casino down the way. And the next morning we zip back up there and they give me an estimate. And I remember just like, my mind was like blank. Like, like when he just found something out, I was just like so gutted. Like the amount of money I had put into it and where it was at now, like I just thought like this dream was like dead. Like what have I done? You know? Yeah, exactly. Like I already like, you know, put so much resources in, so many resources into this thing, and like my whole family was behind it, like my girlfriend and back in Chile was like, you know, waiting for it. Yeah. And I just remember my dad like turning to me, like we like walked away from the register after we kind of like found out how much it would be to fix everything to get this new engine and all the other problems that were found out after driving it 60 miles. And he just pulled me to the side and he's like, if you want to right now, like we can leave it. Like if this is where we're at, you can leave it or you can go forward with it. Like, what do you want to do? And it was just like so real at that moment. Like, yeah,
you gotta make a decision.
Like, yeah. Like, and I was just like, took a sec and had the support of my buddies there. And I was just like, we're doing it. Like, hell, we're in it. We're doing it. Yeah. So, so we flew back to Colorado, came back out December. They fixed it up, new engine, stuff like that, and picked it up round two.
Sick.
Drove it back all the way one day from Idaho back to Breck, and since it's been here, we've got lucky, made it back. Hopefully, it still runs.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah, right. Just crank this thing up, yeah.
But yeah, it's, we've been through a lot so far. But it's fun. I know it's only the beginning, so,
so the,
it's
exciting. The plan is to go to Baker this winter. Is that what you said, right?
So, yeah, definitely kind of a big laundry list of places we want to go.
Okay.
Baker, we went there last year on a Zeal shoot, and it was so incredible. Baker's sick. Like, we love that spot. Yeah. Kellen and I were both there, and just the vibe at the mountain, the terrain. And they have one of the sickest parking lots you can park in overnight.
They do. Like, yeah, it's awesome. They do.
So really set up for the bus. So we came back from that trip like, yeah, we're going to bring the bus there for sure next year, like without a doubt. And then I think from there, we did a trip last year in Canada on the Powder Highway. But I think the dream has always been to really take some time into the Powder Highway. We didn't have the snow conditions we wanted last year or were able to be in the places that we wanted to be.
Right.
For as long as we wanted to be and really kind of get some information and really get a feel for all the places. So I think with the bus, it'll be rad because we'll be able to slow down really wherever we're at and not be like hopping from hotel room to hotel room, but really being able to like establish ourselves in the community and really get a feel for it and really, yeah, feeling grounded in places wherever we might be because we have a traveling home and because we can spend the time there.
Right.
Luckily with skiing that'll be good, and with my other work I do graphic design. I can work remotely and my boss is cool about it, so
I think Slade is the coolest name I think that you could possibly have. Like, you're just
he's a good dude.
That's awesome.
He was my high school art teacher.
Really?
Yeah.
And that's awesome.
I remember so I made a ski movie for my senior project and he was like my advisor too. And we went backcountry skiing when I was in high school. And, you know, like, so I'm pretty stoked to be working for him now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's, dang, that's sick. So what's, what is the Powder Highway for people that don't know? Because I'm sure people are going to Google, I mean, people can Google it too, but I'm sure you can find out whatever you want on the internet now. But
Powder Highway is this kind of long circular road. I don't even know the, it's like 36 or something. I don't know the number of the highway.
Right.
But in interior British Columbia.
Right.
And it connects all these amazing world-class resorts.
Right.
You got Revelstoke, Fernie, Kicking Horse, Rogers Pass, like Banff is even in there, like Lake Louise. Like, it's just incredible. And yeah, we, I'm just really stoked to be up there and ski and get in the backcountry and come back to hopefully a warm roaring fire in the bus.
Yeah, that's awesome. So so you're skiing for Faction now, right?
Yep.
What we usually talk some gear on this thing. So what's your favorite ski from Faction? What do you ski on mostly? What do you like?
Yeah, I think so. Faction has been kind of bolstering this newer Prodigy series.
Yep.
Apart from the Candied series.
Yep.
And it's just been so fun. The Prodigy 3 is like, it's kind of like your Candied 2.0, but a little beefier. And it's just like all mountain crusher. For POW, I've been using the Prodigy 4.
Yep.
And just having the time of my life, like all winter. It's light, it's fun. And man, you can like, I don't know, just go super fast on it.
Right.
Prodigy 1 even for the park is great. It's a great alternative with the Candied 1.
Yeah.
But yeah, just different shapes and really fun skis. Been having a blast on everything.
Those dudes, I mean, probably have the most stacked team. Other than maybe the Solomon, no, I don't even know, dude. Faction has one of the best pro teams like that exists right now.
Yeah, they've got some amazing athletes. Like, it's really exciting to be a part of and watch everything and watch the company grow. I've been with Faction for like 7 years now or something. Yeah, so kind of seeing everything, like the growth in the company, who's coming on board, where we're going as a company, the direction. It's been super exciting and fun to be a part of. And their U.S. office is in Brick, so it's great to hang out with everybody all the time and do a fun events around here. We brought the bus last winter into the Uller Parade and made it a Faction bus.
Sick. So
we, another funny story, but we broke down mid-parade, had to get towed through the parade. God, but always an adventure with this thing.
Right.
But, yeah, really excited to be with them, and I think we're all kind of looking forward to the bus this season and seeing what we can all do with it.
How's Mr. Bottomley do as a team manager?
Dave. Dave's awesome. He is. It's so funny. He's also such a great athlete.
Dude, he kills it.
Oh my gosh.
It's so crazy.
That guy is a beast.
He's the most mellow, good athlete I've ever seen.
He sends too. Like
100%. I saw that Gaper Day, whatever it was, that double back.
Double back on the mono ski.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just shows up to sales meetings and runs like kind of the whole North American
like
program.
Right?
So it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
But we have a great crew there, and they've been nothing but supportive of me and this and yeah, all my ideas, kind of however wild they might be.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. So what are the brands you work with?
Zeal.
Yep.
Hestra gloves and function wear face masks.
Sweet.
Then Bob Culture.
Sweet. So you're pretty much all kitted out.
Colorado.
Yeah. Everybody's here, man. It's so crazy. So I did see you posted up a little bit on the POW Riders Alliance thing.
Yeah.
The other day. So why don't we talk about that a bit? It's actually a couple kids DM'd me and emailed me like, you need to talk more about sustainability on the podcast. You need to talk more about like POW and what they do. And I'm like, okay, yeah. Like, we haven't had anybody on yet that like really talks about that stuff. So like, I mean, what's your thoughts on it? What can people do to be involved? How can we help, you know?
Yeah. So I've been, on the Riders Alliance for POW for probably like 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of mainly came out of, I studied environmental science in college. Every fall, I went to the University of Southern California. I did environmental science and health. So when I was there, just kind of really getting appreciation for what was going on in the planet and with climate. And especially being a skier, just how important and vital that was for me and just getting a better understanding of and being a part of and being an ambassador for. So with POW, I've had opportunities to go speak at schools. I've done like 5 or 6 talks with schools now,
Sick. Which
has been awesome. Yeah, it's been great. Sharing about what we do at POW, kind of what we're committed to, how kids can help. I think especially it's important talking to kids.
Right.
Especially those high school kids, younger kids, and really get it on the forefront of our consciousness, thinking about how we act every day and how we can be cleaner and greener and just be conscious about it, conscious about what we're doing,
right,
what we're wasting, what we're using, who we're supporting. But then for me, like, I've never been the biggest, like, I'm very quiet.
Yeah.
For me, getting active was always difficult. I never knew kind of what to do or how to go about it. But I found with POW, it's been so easy because they give you all the resources that you could ever need. Information. They help you register to vote. They help you get out there. And now POW just started a new organization under POW. And I think it's like 501(c)(4), something a little different.
Yeah.
But it's the POW Action Fund. And that's really to give people the more information about in action steps to voting pro climate.
Right.
Because before with POW, they couldn't really tell people how to vote or what to do. But now we kind of have a better informational process, and preparing people more with kind of those resources to be active and get involved in their community, go to town talks or town halls or go to call their senator or whatever it might be to really enact change. Because it's important for sure.
It's important. I think like now we're in like a situation where you kind of have somebody in office and a lot of somebody's in office, not just Trump. I mean, obviously Trump's the big one, but like that don't seem to get it necessarily, that are kind of disenchanted and disconnected from the whole environmental side of it. So they don't see the effect of it so much. And it's not like I see a lot of comments online always on POW stuff is like, you know, like, just go ski, you know, or like shut up and just go do what you do. You know, you don't need to be involved in the political aspect of it, but it's not even so much the political aspect of it, right? It's like, we're just trying to be involved in the things that are important to us as athletes, as skiers, as enthusiasts, right? Like that's kind of the plan.
Absolutely. I mean, I think what's important about skiing and snowboarding and being an outdoor athlete is like, we see firsthand the consequences and things that are going on.
Right.
Because we're at these locations, we see how they've changed throughout time. We see differing snowpack, we see all these wildfires, we see the beetle kill, we see all these effects of climate change. And so I think for us too, especially skiing and snowboarding, what's important is like, especially with POW and the athletes that they have on board, it's using their skiing and snowboarding as a platform to give people like the information and share their thoughts about the climate and the environment is just, it's huge, right? So if you have that opportunity, you have these followers, like, why would you not share what you care about and what's important to you?
Yeah, no, it's important. So I definitely am glad we got to chat a little bit about that. But so if people want to find you on social media, they want to find the bus on social media, how do they find it?
Yeah, my Instagram is at Cody Cir, C-I-R. Yes, my name is taken. I couldn't do it. But then we just started a bus from the bus, or we started an Instagram for the bus called the Honey House. Or it's called Honey House Bus. We just kind of started that. So we're going to be posting the progress on it, our adventures, what's going on, and hopefully be able to link up with people throughout the season, because I know we're going to be at a bunch of different ski lots. So hopefully throwing some tailgates and...
Yeah, hell yeah. You know? People will reach out, I'm sure.
Yeah, some wooden bloodies. Oh, really awesome. Make the bus fun this year. We're excited for it.
I'm sure it'll work out well. We'll wrap this thing up. One more time, who are your sponsors?
Skiing for Zeal, Faction, Hester Gloves, and Function Wear, and Bob Culture.
Awesome. Thank you for having us, dude.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in the bus.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. So that was our episode with Cody Cirillo. I hope you enjoyed it. I definitely enjoyed talking to him. I hope to have him, and maybe we'll get Kellen on next time too. That would be excellent. And I'm super excited to see what these guys can do with this whole bus thing. It seems like a lot of people are kind of moving towards that mobile home life in the ski world, and I think it's amazing. So be sure to follow Cody on Instagram at Cody Cyr. That's Cody C-I-R, and at the Honey Bus, which is the name of their bus. And definitely make sure you rate, review, and like this show on whatever platform you're listening to it on. It helps us tremendously. Obviously, tell your friends about it. Share stuff on social that you like. We'll have a ton of great content coming for the next couple months here. So stay tuned. And as always, we appreciate you guys listening. Thanks.